Hi, thanks for joining me for episode 10 of Shelf Love, where we use romance novels as the text to discuss ourselves, relationships, and the society that we live in. Each week, my guest and I read and discuss a different romance novel, have some fun, and share crowdsourced contributions from other romance readers. I'm your host, Andrea Martucci, and I've been reading romance novels since before the first episode of Survivor aired. I'm recording north of Boston, and today I'm joined by Kelly Reynolds. Kelly is the effervescent host of Boobies and Newbies, a podcast that introduces newbies to the romance genre. On today's episode, Kelly and I discuss Wallbanger, a hit rom-com from 2014 by Alice Clayton. This book features a missing orgasm, neighbors to lovers, and a modern rake archetype. We also dive into generational crushes, why some books seem to age really fast, and what makes a book worth reading. Hot Damn No Ma'am is back, and you can hear Kelly and I play it on episode extras that I will release later this week, so watch out for that. Kelly will also share her Write This Book idea on that extra episode. Info on upcoming guests and books are at the end of the episode, so stick around. And also remember that this podcast contains explicit language and mature themes. Kelly, tell me how/why you started Boobies and Newbies, the podcast.
Well, I am a longtime romance reader. I've been reading it for over 10 years now. And I feel like for so many years, I've had friends/strangers in airports/people at the nail salon just sort of like give me that side eye of like, that's what you're reading? Interesting. And I just, it's one of those things that I'm like, I don't understand. I feel like if everybody tried romance or tried some form of romance or erotic fiction, then they would love it. And so I sort of started Boobies and Newbies with like this selfish purpose to make everyone love romance, or at least give it a try and hopefully love it as much as I do. So that was the whole conception behind the idea of bringing newbies into the genre to try their very first romance novel and, you know, cross my fingers, fall in love with the genre.
Well, and so I know you listened to the Halloween Boo episode of Shelf Love, where I tried to introduce my friend Becky to romance novels and perhaps chose the worst introduction to the genre.
It's so funny. I feel like you had such a great idea, though, where you're like, she's from Salem. This is, it's Halloween time. I would have done the same thing. I mean, I feel like I try and do the same thing because every episode I have somebody that's new to the genre and I try to pick a book that I know will maybe hit some of their interests. Like if they're, you know, in science, I try and find something with a female scientist, or I at least ask them, you know, what it is. If there is something they're looking for, if it's a specific kink or fantasy or ideal partner, I try and find that. So it's like almost guaranteed to succeed. So I don't think you were off the mark. I feel like you definitely gave it a great shot.
Thank you. And I was just listening to your Halloween Boo episode with Zoe from Tea and Strumpets.
Yes.
I actually felt vindicated because the episode with my friend Becky, we talked about a lot of similar points that I kind of in the edit, they got stripped away because on Shelf Love, I guess I would say the books that we, it's not a book review podcast.
Right.
I'm not trying to like say this is good or bad. I want to cover books worth reading. And I never want to linger on kind of like, do I like this or why do I like or dislike this?
Sure.
And really just focus on the themes. And so when my friend Becky and I did the episode, I was like, oh my God, this is so negative. And I really just worry that we're picking this apart too much. How much of this is influenced by the fact that Becky is not a lover of the genre and kind of doesn't understand as many of the tropes and sort of the language of romance. And but you and Zoe, who are both well-read in the genre, although Zoe is a newbie to
new to contemporary.
Yes. I was like, oh my God. Okay. Thank you, God. It wasn't just me and Becky kind of like getting into this dark zone. I feel so terrible for cutting all of that out.
No, honestly, I appreciate what you did of like going back and, you know, having this discussion with her about, you know, maybe we didn't come into this with the right perspective on both of your ends. I thought that was really admirable that you guys actually went back and rediscussed it and everything. But at the same time, I feel like there were definitely things you touched on in both that I was like, oh, yep, I completely understand where you're coming from on this one. So yeah, it was one of those ones where I found it like enjoyable, but that's it. I found it enjoyable, period. We'll leave it at that.
Well, so every episode you are introducing a newbie to romance novels. And one of the things that I think I was a bit unprepared for when doing this with my friend was the amount of insider knowledge that you sort of accumulate and the things that you no longer even stop to think about.
Sure.
And I'm curious, in every single one of your episodes, it must be challenging to help guide people in such a way where you're not pushing them away by being like, you're wrong about that, but also kind of being like, okay, that's great. Let me bring you in here and also help you understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, the last thing I want to do is alienate my guests. I don't want to put off anybody who listens to the podcast because I know we have listeners who are avid romance readers like us and they read the books as we review them. And then I know that we also have other listeners who don't read romance at all. And they just kind of listen in for the enjoyment factor of, you know, two people discussing a book. So, I mean, the last thing I want to do is, you know, make anybody feel uncomfortable, especially my guest. It's definitely got its challenges. I feel like I've learned as I've been doing it because it's been over a year now of, you know, just kind of what works, what doesn't work. But I am still finding things that will surprise me when I do these episodes where, you know, I'll mention a specific trope or I'll mention the fact that in a lot of romance novels, there's several characters because the author is setting up a series and they kind of coexist in this like shared romance Marvel universe. And that's always like amazing to some of my guests, like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And it's stuff like that that I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. I just assume that so many people already are aware of what exists in this world. But I think the best thing is that most of my guests, like a vast majority, come into the experience with a very open mind. I think I've definitely had some guests who came into it thinking, oh my gosh, I'm gonna read like a shitty romance novel and tear this thing apart. And there's a couple episodes that have been like that. And I can tell listening to it that like they came into it not with a great mindset, but everybody else who's done the podcast, like I said, the majority of my guests have been very open to the experience. And for them, it's been the most rewarding because they've walked out of it with, I tried something I've never tried before. And you know what? I had all these misconceptions about this entire genre before reading this book, most of which have been changed by reading it. And now I'm kind of walking out of here with an open mind and maybe willing to try something new. That's all I can hope for. I mean, the best feeling is when I'm able to recommend another romance novel to my guests afterwards because they want more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I am obviously of a similar mindset where I'm like, I want to bring more people in to the genre. And I also completely understand. I would say it seems like half and half, like the people I encounter, some people are like, whatever, like if they don't like it, I'm not here to change hearts and minds. But, you know, we're podcasters.
Right.
We're like a different breed, you know?
Yeah.
we're actually just trying to build the audience of people who will listen to our podcast.
Absolutely. That's it. That's all there is to it.
So, Kelly, what do you do in your life?
Oh my gosh, what don't I do, Andrea? That's the real question. I'm a freelance writer, so I do a lot of blogging and social media and everything. I teach online creative writing and screenwriting classes for a university. I went to get my master's and go to film school, which, you know, money well spent, and with the intention of moving to Los Angeles and being a screenwriter. And that's, you know, still what I do. I do my own writing. I'm hoping to finally finish a novel this November for NaNoWriMo. If you ask what I do to pay the bills, it's like a whole lot of, you know, little things here and there, as well as teaching. But what I do is I podcast, I write, I direct. I just directed a play. I'm working on a web series right now. So I consider myself to be an artist. I try to dabble in a little bit of everything. I also get bored very easily. It's one of the side effects of being an Aries. So I always need to be doing something. And most of the time, it's that I always need to be doing something creative.
Yeah, that does sound like a smorgasbord of creative activities, and it sounds amazing.
Yeah, you know what? It keeps me happy. I love it. I love podcasting. I love writing. I feel like podcasting, especially in the last year, has just opened my eyes to like a whole world of possibilities and opportunities that I didn't even realize existed. So I'm so thankful for this entire like community of podcasters that we have.
It is an amazing community. I really enjoy how supportive everybody is of everybody else. And
yes,
I had like, I don't know, like one episode out and you were like, yeah, I'll get on your podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know me, I just always want to talk. So, I mean, I'm more than willing to talk about, you know, books, donuts, whatever. Like I'm here for it.
So if somebody was unaware of Boobies and Newbies thus far, and they were like, what's a great episode to get a taste of what Boobies and Newbies has in store so that then they can go through all other 56 of your episodes, what would be a good episode to start with?
Oh, boy. Okay. That's a tough one. Well, okay. We review a lot more contemporary romance than we do tend to do period Victorian romance. Not to say that we haven't reviewed some of that. And I do appreciate a good Victorian romance here and there. But I find that when I introduce people to romance for the first time, I usually introduce them to something contemporary just because I feel like maybe they can connect with it better just because it's like of our era. Mm-hmm. So one of the ones I enjoyed recently was called Prince of Sin by Cass Ford. And she's actually a Los Angeles author. And I've met her. She's very sweet. And I found the novel really interesting because it's about the porn industry. Like the male protagonist is a porn star. So it was something that I was like, oh, kind of wondering how this is going to work out. And it was just something that I really hadn't read before. And I think the episode is absolutely hilarious because my guests are the co-hosts of There Will Be Porn podcast. And I was like, well, who better to talk about a book that's about porn than the girls who discuss porn in every episode of their podcast?
Yeah.
I feel like it was a match made in heaven, and it was just such a fun one to record that I think people would probably really enjoy it and hopefully enjoy it as much as I do.
Coincidentally, that is one of the ones I have listened to and can confirm.
Oh my gosh.
Great episode.
I'm so glad. That's so funny.
So are you ready to jump into Wallbanger?
Oh, you know it. I am here for it.
Let's get banging. Wallbanger by Alice Clayton. This book came out in 2014, I believe. And Alice Clayton published a bunch of books between 2013 and 2017, but hasn't really published anything since then. So I hope you're doing well, Alice, because lots of good books in there and we'd like more from you. She's written lots of contemporaries, and this is a contemporary romance where I would call it definitely a rom-com.
Yes. In fact, I feel like this is the perfect example of a rom-com, and they reference so many rom-coms within the book that I was like, well, that just like nails that home for sure.
Yes, exactly. And so the book is about a young woman named
Caroline Reynolds. And I know that because my last name is Reynolds.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, so it's about Caroline Reynolds and her next door neighbor, Simon.
Yes.
Parker? Simon something?
I mean, I just got used to calling him Simon Wallbanger because that's what everybody else calls him.
Yes. Okay, yeah, so Simon Wallbanger. Caroline moves into a new apartment and everything is fantastic until she goes to sleep that night and is rudely interrupted when the wall behind her bed starts banging as her neighbor takes part in some very vigorous sex And this is repeated night after night with different women who all have funny little quirks. Thus starts off a neighbors to romance story, where almost like an enemies to romance, where they,
yes.
where she's very angry at him disturbing her sleep, and he has his, she keeps calling it a harem of women, which is not untrue, but she comes to see him as a more full human being later.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's good. I think that's a good description.
Thank you. Thank you. It was obviously, I just made it up. I probably could have just read the book description, but I chose to really.
More original.
Yes. And obviously I'm deeply connected to these characters, given that I can't remember their names.
I feel like the one thing we have to also mention is the fact that not only is Simon Wahlbanger like disturbing Caroline's sleep, which, you know, is problematic enough. I get it. But Caroline has lost her orgasm. And I feel like there's definitely an element of jealousy and resentment towards the women next door that Simon Wahlbanger can clearly make orgasm over and over again.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mentioned I was going to do this book a while ago. And got some thoughts from our listener, Jess. And Jess has been with us from the beginning. She messaged me after, like, the first episode and was like, I can't wait for you to become real big so that I can manage your events in the Boston area.
Oh, I love it.
Like, Jess, I love you. So thank you, Jess, for – Jess always has the greatest contributions. So everybody has great contributions. But, I mean, I really have a soft place in my heart for Jess, who's been with us from the beginning.
You rock, Jess.
She's so great. She wrote – about Wahlbanger. Hoo boy, I am not a fan of this book, largely because I found I found the two leads incredibly stale. For me, it was the equivalent of a dating profile where the guy writes, I'm funny and sarcastic. No, sir, that is incorrect. If you were, you would have said something funny and or sarcastic.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. I love that.
So she says, it felt like a whole lot of telling, very little showing, and that's always less satisfying. I don't mind an enemies to lovers story, and I adore a forced proximity situation. Just not with these people, please.
Oh my, okay. I wish you could have seen my face when you said the thing about the telling, not showing. I was in full on like snap mode, like, yes, I hear you, Jess. Okay, that was one of my biggest notes.
Okay, great. Yes. So this is a book that I read probably closer to when it originally came out. And this book, I think, made quite a splash when it came out. It was like the book everybody was talking about. And my memory of this book was that it was really fun. And it was like a fun contemporary
romp.
Kind of in the same vein as like Jennifer Crusie, like in that tradition.
Yes.
And upon reread yesterday, I felt like, you know how Sex and the City seemed super fun and sexy back in 2000?
Yes.
And now you go back and you watch them and you're like, ooh, girl. Mm-mm. It's a little, yeah.
No,
it's a little
sure.
problematic, and there's a lot of effort going into the humor, and you're like,
Absolutely. Well, and take it from somebody who I must mention Sex and the City in almost every one of my episodes for Boobies and Newbies. It is one of my like all time problematic faves, and I still watch it, you know, over and over again to this very day, alongside Friends, which I know is also not aged that well. And they are two shows, though, where when they're not trying and it's just funny, it's funny. But a lot of the time it is very, very forced. So I completely understand that.
Yeah. And I want to preface this by saying the books that I cover on this podcast, I mean, most of the time now I'm asking my guests to identify a book. And when you and I were talking, I was like, well, I've been meaning to do Wahlbanger. Can we do Wahlbanger?
Yeah.
And I always seek to do books that are worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that they're perfect books. And it doesn't mean that they're like books you'd recommend. It's just kind of like books that add something interesting to the genre and everything.
Sure.
Yeah. Upon rereading this, I'm like, it was enjoyable at times, but also I noticed a lot of things like the pacing mm-hmm. was not the best, and
the characters
were a little flat. Language wasn't quite as like peppy and fun as I thought it was initially. And
sure.
And then there were these problematic-ish elements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's, like, aging well. Like, that was, like, 5 years ago. That wasn't that long ago?
Right. I mean, it's weird to think about the fact that we're like, oh, 2014. I'm like, yeah, that was just a few years ago. Like, it's really not that far off.
Has society had, like, a big evolution since then? I feel like there has been much more of a greater discussion around some of these topics where I feel like maybe like all of our thinking has evolved much more than we may think in the past 5 years. The collective cultural discussion around things has evolved.
Sure. Yeah, I think so. And then also, I mean, I feel like what it all boils down to is there have also been better books in the last 5 years. This was my first read of this book. Like, I know that you were coming into this rereading, and this was my first read. And I think we're definitely going to have a lot of points that we for sure agree on. But I can say that this is something where some of the points that are in this book, I think, do warrant discussion. So especially everything related to the missing orgasm. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the one thing that really sets this book apart from a lot of romance. So that would be like what I would call the saving grace for this book.
So let's get into the missing O.
Yeah.
So the missing O is set up where Caroline had a sort of traumatic, she jokes about it, but she had like a really bad sexual experience with this guy. And 2019 Andrea is like, why did you let this guy jackhammer at you for 30 minutes?
30 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I was like the person in me who wants her to have put a stop to that instead of just enduring it. Finds that problematic. I don't know if that's holding her to unrealistic of a standard.
Right.
But so she had this really bad sexual experience with a guy. And ever since then, every time she tries to masturbate, she is not able to orgasm. And she has kind of written off men for the meantime because she is missing her orgasm.
Yeah. And I have to say, it gets a little gratuitous after a while, but I do like the fact that the missing O is basically written as like another character. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like how you guys discussed in Halloween Boo about how Zachary's penis was like a whole yes. separate character. And which I, again, completely agree with. But yeah, in this one, at first I found it really endearing. I did that she talks to her O. She calls it O or the missing O or my O. And O is capitalized as if it's somebody's name. And there's definitely a characterization to O. Like when she eventually does have sex and sees it approaching, she's like, oh, I could see O on the nearby beach. And I wave to her and I'm like, oh, you're here. Like, great. So, I mean, there was something very sweet about that that I did like. I feel like it got a little cheesy after a while. But other than that, I really did like that this was a character. I've lost someone or I'm missing someone. I mean, she really does kind of make it seem like it's been like a death in the family yeah. sort of thing. Like, I've lost O. Where will I find her again? And it was something different. It definitely set it apart from, I feel like I've read a few stories where there's been like the missing orgasm, one of which was a Jennifer Cruzy. But yeah, not very much in contemporary romance. I feel like I'm not seeing that discussion as much. Mm-hmm.
And I think it is an important discussion because I think the mental component of sexual desire is much more important for women
mm-hmm.
to achieve orgasm, and that mental blocker can be very real
right.
in preventing a woman from experiencing an orgasm. And that isn't addressed enough. Where it's romance, it's fantasy, and I think part of the fantasy in romance is that, particularly people who believe in sort of like fate, is that there's this person out there who their mere touch is 100 times more pleasurable than a touch from anyone else,
mm-hmm.
and that you know that they're the right person because you have such an intense physical reaction to them. It's like pheromones times 1,000,
right?
Just like ratcheted up. You feel their presence in the room. You're like...
You don't have to work for it. I mean, because it's true. Yeah. We want everything to be easy, right? Yeah. We want everything to happen for us and happen to us, and not that we have to make it happen ourselves, because that takes more work and work is less sexy. Mm-hmm. I almost wish there had been more work done in the story, like as far as that goes. Like, I know we have a scene of her masturbating and, you know, she's almost there and she tries to get there and it doesn't happen because Simon's, you know, fucking some girl next door. And then we have her fantasizing about Simon and, you know, having these like dreams about him and getting a little bit closer. And then eventually what I did like was I did like that when they do eventually have sex with each other, when they have sex with each other, that's really weird.
Well, to be fair, Simon has sex with other women in over the course of the book. So
yeah, but you know, to be specific, when Simon and Caroline have sex, I actually really did like the fact that she doesn't orgasm like right away, that the first time that they're together, it was almost like she had that understanding of, okay, he's the one. I think I love him. Like, this is going to be it. Like, he makes all those other girls come. He's going to make me come. And then when it doesn't happen, it's understandable the disappointment that she feels. I feel like that was the one time in the book where I could really connect with Caroline, where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry this didn't happen for you.
Yeah.
And it felt almost more worth it at the end that way, because the one thing I was worried about was kind of what you were talking about with the fate element of there being this moment that when they do have sex, that's it. Simon solves all her problems with his magical penis. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that it didn't go there all the way. But that was definitely something that was kind of in the back of my mind as I was reading that I was worried about.
Yeah, right. When you have a situation where the woman is missing the O, you don't want him to come and solve it.
Right.
And I think that like the evolution that was happening was she had talked about having, you know, various one night stands and how they were usually pleasurable for her. And then after this experience with this one guy, it was like she just wasn't interested anymore. And I think what grew between her and Simon was we're actually growing an emotional connection with each other.
Yes.
And so even that, she kind of had hoped that that growing emotional attraction and the growth in their relationship, I'm doing something different, and so surely this must fix it. Like, I'm replacing George Clooney with Simon's face.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. She's a 26-year-old in 2014 picturing George Clooney. That
I thought that was weird.
That was weird. I was like, no.
And then she was also thinking about Jared Leto, like, circa My So-Called Life.
Yeah.
I was just like, wait a second. I'm almost 29 in 2019, and I feel like we're not far off from each other. And yes, George Clooney is a good-looking man, but
Not the prime fantasy, probably, for most 26-year-olds.
Where's a Hemsworth? Yeah, you got to throw a Hemsworth brother in there, or one of the Chrises or something. Yeah,
or Devon Sawa.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There's like prime millennial masturbation material. Yes. Right there.
Yes. Maybe. Okay. My mind went to Casper.
Yes.
But he's like a child. Have you seen Casper recently? He's like a child.
I know. But you know what? I feel like that was definitely like one of those early fantasies, right, for like most millennial girls. But like you didn't know it at the time. Like you're like, ooh, he's cute. Like, ooh, I had a dream about him. Why did I have a dream about him?
Oh, I knew. I had, you know, like teen beat, like Devon Sawa tear outs, like on,
yes,
like in a, sorry, not on my wall, but like in a notebook behind protective plastic covering.
I was going to say like on the binder.
The binder, you know,
In the plastic binder cover, for sure.
Binders full of Devon Sawas.
Yes.
And JTT.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. JTT. Oh, such a fave.
Right.
Such a fave. Love him.
It's okay to be into child Devon Sawa when you are also basically a child. So, you know, that's fine.
Yeah. At 29, like maybe not so much, but, you know, he grew up.
Yeah. We all grew up. Yay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, you know, reading some reviews of this book, I think some people thought that the missing O thing was like a little bit beaten to the ground.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree.
It is an interesting thing to talk about, you know, as we said, it is often that if the woman in a romance novel is in a heterosexual relationship and she's having problems with orgasms, it's just because she hasn't found the right guy.
Found the right one.
Right, and he just knows what to do. Everything he does is like the right thing to do. And that's part of the fantasy too, right?
Oh, for sure.
And I want to talk about how Simon is a player, where it is well established that he has sexual prowess. Like, he's real good at sex. And you know what? That's nice when a guy is really good at sex. But I think that part of the fantasy and romance is also not just that he has a bag of tricks, but that he is paying attention to you and is, like, tailoring his actions to
gifts
to your reactions. And look at me, I'm obviously putting myself in the place of the heroine. It's the I notice everything about you, I notice the hitch in your breath when I touch you here.
Oh, that hitch, that magical hitch in that breath. Oof. Yep. No, I agree. I think it's like twofold. I think it's exactly what you're saying, where it's like, oh my gosh, like, I've made his radar. Like, you know, this guy could, like, be fucking anybody. And, like, there's something about me and he pays attention to me. Like, that's for sure. I mean, I get that for sure. And then I feel like the other part of it is, again, something that I feel like is in a lot of older romance and not as much in 2019 romance. So it's less problematic now. But even just 5 years ago, it was a big difference. And there's this trope where women need to fix the man. And I think that's something that comes off the pages into real life, that even men have this idea that, oh, yeah, women just want to fix her upper. Like, they just want to fix him up. And I think there's, like, some danger with that in this book, too, in that it's not that she's actively going after him, you know, and trying to make him better. But, you know, she talks to him and they become friends. And the longer they talk, she's like, always talking about his harem, or his haremette, as she calls it. And oh, there's only two of them now. Oh, well, that's good. Good for you. You're narrowing it down, sort of thing. And, you know, just sort of this thing that you have to make someone, tailor them to be like the perfect partner for you. And I kind of got that vibe a little bit. Like I said, I don't think it was as prevalent as it is in some romances, though.
There was definitely a not like other girls vibe of,
yes,
he assumes that part of the reason he can't have just like a monogamous relationship that is both emotional and sexual is that he travels all the time for work. That's not going to change. It's incredibly fulfilling to him. And women want the white picket fence. Like, all women want this. And she tells him from the beginning, well, that's not what I want. Like, we're not all like that. We're not a monolith, which is true.
Yeah, she says that, like, multiple times.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing to have a male character who needs to learn the lesson that all women are not the same because he had one experience with, you know, sorry, this is actually something that happens a lot in romance and in life, probably. Like, you encounter, like, you know, your first girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever has something and you're like, oh, I guess that's the way it is.
Right. That's a real life thing, too, which is so unfortunate. But that definitely does affect a lot of people. And to the point where I'm like, OK, you need to get out there, go on a date, and also maybe go see a therapist for a little bit and, like, work yourself through these issues that you have.
Right, this damaging self-talk that you have.
Yeah.
Speaking of therapists, so A, everyone should go to therapy. B,
yes,
listening to Where Should We Begin, which is a podcast with Esther Perel, who is this relationship therapist who just everything she says is, it's beautiful. I think she's, is she French? I don't know. She has an accent and it's really beautiful. But it's really fascinating because you're basically sitting in on a couple's therapy session.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, everybody is consenting to this situation.
Yeah, sure.
It's not like she's secretly recording her couple's therapy sessions. And one of the episodes that I listened to recently, like in the new season, was both people in the relationship kind of cheated on other people with the other person, and the guy was kind of a serial cheater. And they have this conversation about, like, why does the woman stay with this man? Like, she knows what he's like. And Esther Perel makes this point about, well, you know that he's like this, and you want to fix him because then it proves that you're special.
Yeah.
You are special. You are not the dummy. You are smarter than all those other dummies who gave up on him because...
You won. You win the big prize. You get to keep him now. You fixed him.
Right. And that is not something that appeals to me at all.
Me neither. And you know what? I've seen my friends go through this with people. Not as terrible as cheating, because I feel like I have a good, solid group of friends where I don't think any of us would condone that. However, I do have to say that I've read so many stories and I've known enough people where it's not that I agree with cheating, but I do understand sometimes why it happens in a relationship. But also, I think it's how people respond to it that makes or breaks the situation. And too often, people kind of let it slide under the rug as opposed to, like, addressing it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, well, I have to be the bigger person and forgive you now. And I'm like, what?
No, you don't.
Yeah, like, no way. You do not have to be the bigger person. Like, you can forgive this person. That doesn't mean you have to be with them.
Exactly. And also, like, if you stay with them and you're saying you're forgiving them, just staying with them doesn't automatically imply that you have forgiven them. Like, it's mm-hmm. you need to talk about these things. I mean, this is why we've ruined dating today.
I know. Why did we make dating so hard for everybody involved by forcing people to communicate and work through their issues?
God, it's the worst. It's the worst.
2019. I think that what's interesting about Simon's character is he's kind of in a steady sexual relationship with three women, which is what Caroline calls his harem.
Yeah.
He has an emotional bond to all three of these women. Everybody is totally on the same page that what is between them is purely sexual with a side of friendship. So he's not cheating on anyone. He's not necessarily, I wouldn't call that promiscuous. Like, they're steady partners, but just different women.
Yeah.
I don't really have a problem with that. I have some logistical questions about safety. Like, I'm sure they're having safe sex, you know. Okay, let's sidestep that.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
But I think particularly in historical romance and particularly older historical romance, the way you set up every male character, and without fail, every male character, absolutely, they were, like, basically, they were rakes, you know, they're just, like, having sex with everybody all over town, and of course, none of the logistics of this, like, you're not supposed to think too hard about the fact that, you're like, wait a second, like, they're all having unprotected sex with everybody all over town, they obviously would have syphilis, and, you know, their nose would be falling off, you know, whatever, sidestep.
Setting all that aside, the syphilis and everything.
Right, and like in contemporary, like a lot of times the male character is set up, again, particularly like 10 plus years ago, it's like, well, look what a stud he is. He can have a sexual partner whenever he wants. Women are just falling at his feet. But then you think about the logistics of that and you're like, that's kind of gross. I don't want to shame anyone for like having a lot of sex and enjoying it, but it's always talked about in such a way where it's like the male character is like just using these women because he has no interest in them as people.
Yeah.
They're like hankies to be used and discarded, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's like jacking off into them. Like, that's basically what they're there for, is like masturbatory material.
Yeah. They don't even seem to register that the people they're having sex with are sentient human beings with their own wants and desires.
Right.
And it's always like a little pathetic when some woman thinks that they had something special and won't leave him alone afterwards.
Yeah. That was actually one of the things I found refreshing about this book, was that he does have, I'm with you, I was like a little apprehensive at first going into it, because, you know, we find out that he has, you know, a revolving door of women, because he has the like three different nights, three different women. So my first thought is, oh, this guy's just, you know, fucking everything that moves. Okay. But when we come to find out that he's got basically like the same three women in rotation, and like they also have friendships with each other, and when he eventually breaks it off, or, you know, they kind of go their separate ways, it's always very amicable and everything. I was like, Well, that's different. I found that there were a lot of relationships outside of the central relationship that I found really interesting. And that was definitely one of them.
Yeah. And Caroline is actually the more shamey.
Yes.
Of the two about it. She is trying to shame him for this and making judgments about the women he's in these relationships with. And he does a fairly good job of stepping up and defending his partners and pushing back on Caroline for her judginess. Caroline was a little bit of a prude at times in this book.
Yeah. I'm going with internalized misogyny, yes, for sure.
I think there was a lot of internalized misogyny where, you know, she's talking to her boss who knows Simon and wants them to get together and says something like, you know, I'm a traditional girl. Why would you try to set me up with a guy like that? I'm like, okay, Caroline.
Right. And she's always just giving him shit after shit about, like, you were out with another woman. She names them all, like, their own nicknames. She doesn't call them by their names. I'm just like, you're either, like, insanely jealous or you just have so much internalized misogyny that, like, you can't understand why this relationship would be okay with him and these other women. But at the same time, she has one-night stands, too. So right. I don't understand where it's coming from.
Yeah, I like how generous you are in thinking about it from the perspective of she's more giving him shit because she's a little jealous rather than just intense hatred for all other women.
I'm trying to understand. You know, it's especially when you have so many different relationships. Like, I mean, we haven't even talked about, but I found it really interesting, the like weird foursome relationship thing, yes, that's happening with her friends and his friends, and like they kind of match up because they're like, oh, that's my perfect guy. And then like halfway into dating, they're like, actually, I like the other one. Like, I didn't even know what to do with that.
Yeah, no, the friend relationships were interesting because they initially pair off according to their types. So it is stated quite explicitly that the women's types are exactly matching up with the two dudes, and the two guys, they also have types and they match up. And what they realize is beneath the surface that when it comes to actually seeing the others as people, that they actually enjoy the swapped partners more. Like, they're actually a much better personality, yep, fit. And, you know, I actually do like that. I think it would have been a tidy and a little weird if the two friends just, they look and they're like, from across the room, I see that you are perfect for me. And guess what? Also, personality-wise, we are perfect for each other. And we can just pair off like this. So,
right.
I do think that was like an interesting thing that Alice Clayton played with, was that sort of, you know, your type should not just be the way people look.
Yeah. It's, again, like the other relationships were really interesting. Like, there's a lot to be said about this book. I don't know if it's all positive, but there's definitely stuff happening in this book that, like, I don't see in a lot of romance. And that, to me alone, is always worth talking about, just because I'm like, well, this is different. This is different. And I admire somebody for putting this out here and, like, having this discussion and creating these relationships. So kudos, Alice.
Right. So they're coming back from Tahoe. And this was something I noted as a really interesting format to tell the story. So,
okay.
So this book is written in first person from Caroline's point of view. So you are straight up in Caroline's head for this entire book, mm-hmm, except for this one chapter where, and sorry, actually there's a little bit of like epistolary where you're getting the texts between people, and you're also,
yes,
you're also seeing texts between characters who are not, you know, Caroline and Simon. So like, if you're Caroline in her POV, you would understand the text between her and Simon. But then there's also like, you're seeing the text between other friends kind of telling the story, which is,
right,
really interesting. So there is a precedent for like what happens. But then in this one chapter, you're kind of getting like inside the heads of everybody who's in this one car driving back from Tahoe. And it's a really interesting way to tell the story. And I thought it was kind of experimental, and
yeah,
and it's like the perfect point where you need to get a little bit more of like what Simon is thinking, because from Caroline's perspective, what happened in the previous scenes is like kind of confusing to her. And I think seeing Simon's perspective at that point is important to kind of show how into her and like how he feels like he messed up and he wants to communicate with her. And then you get into the heads of the friends, and the friends' inner monologue is kind of silly, but it kind of like livens things up.
Yeah, it lightens the mood for sure. I'm with you. I thought that was so interesting. I don't think I've ever really read anything like that before. I've definitely seen text messages written out, you know, in romance novels, and, you know, sometimes they'll jump to like a new section or chapter where it's from a new person's perspective. But yeah, I don't think I'd ever seen it written out that way before. And I thought it was really cute. Like, I almost wish there was more of it, because I feel like if the book hadn't been exclusively told from Caroline's point of view, I might have liked it more.
Yeah. No, that would have been interesting. Maybe to get a little bit more insight into Simon's relationships and why he likes Caroline so much. Because
exactly.
It is kind of hard to get enough of that from just Caroline's POV.
Yeah.
And then most notably, at the very end of the book, you get into the cat's point of view. So Clive.
Oh, yeah.
Caroline's cat.
Which I don't know how. I mean, that was kind of funny because it honestly took me a second. And then when the cat mentions like the feeder, he calls her the feeder.
And the tall one.
I was like, oh, my God. This is the cat. Like, what? But I don't know. I guess I was okay with it.
It's. I think it's definitely like playing with the conventions of the form.
Yeah.
And it was. I thought that the writing from Clive's point of view, it's like very like elegant and a little formal.
Yeah.
Like, I think you could go the other way of broken English cat speak.
Oh, no. I was like picturing him as British.
Yeah.
Like, he was like the tan France of cats.
You're right. There's a lot that is interesting about this book. It's definitely a book worth reading. I think, you know, honestly, any book is going to have elements that you're like, oh, that's a little problematic.
Yeah.
Like, one thing I thought was a bit problematic was there was like some fat shaming in this book.
Yeah, for sure. Which I am a fat girl and I am not okay with that.
Yeah.
That's a big no. It's, again, it's one of those things where I'm like, this was only 5 years ago. And there were several moments where I was like thinking it was 15 years ago. I don't know. It's one of those things that rubs me the wrong way. And I wonder, I'm like, have we really had that much change in the last 5 years to be able to discuss this so differently? But
yeah, I think, I mean, and it's not to say that like prior to a larger discussion in society about these things, people were not made uncomfortable by those things before.
Sure.
But I think it is definitely, gatekeepers are probably much more aware of those things. And readers generally are more aware of these phrasings that are not great. Like, though, I highlighted one, like, they clung to every word like fat kids at a buffet. I'm like, what? Come on.
I know.
And it's like, I know you're trying to be funny, but you can use another phrase there that is not offensive.
That's not a funny phrase to me. That's a womp womp kind of phrase.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that didn't land. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. So overall, a very interesting book. Some interesting themes. It definitely made a splash at the time it came out. So it's interesting, even just kind of as like a representation of the zeitgeist of like 2014.
Yeah, it is interesting because I think about like the romance novels that are coming out now that are making like a big splash. Like, I mean, the one I think about this year was Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. Like, that one was everywhere. And then last year, it was The Kiss Quotient. I feel like that one was like the really big one that everybody was talking about. And I just think about like what's going on in those books now and how they're just so different from, you know, this one, which was 5 years ago, and how this was like the hot take then. So yeah, I feel like it's definitely a societal thing. Like, a lot has changed, and I think a lot has changed in romance too.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really interesting though to just kind of take a peek at history, I guess, if you want to call it, but just like, you know, from a few years ago.
Right. All right, so let's rank Wallbanger on heat, humor, and angst. So Kelly, on a 5-point scale, what would you give Wallbanger for Heat?
You know what? I'd probably give it like a 3.5 when they finally do get to the sex. You know, it's for sure a slow burn. Like, I would call it a glacial burn. Yeah. When you finally get to it, they do it and do it and do it and do it. And I'm like, you get it, girl. You get that, oh. But it takes some time, and I do appreciate the buildup. But I feel like it was maybe a little slow for my personal taste.
Yeah, that's where I felt there were problems with pacing, where I think what we're used to in a well-paced romance is there is some physical intimacy that progresses, and then there's like a step back emotionally and physically. There's a dance going on. And this book, it was like kind of like 0 to 60.
Yes.
0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Like bang, 3 chapters of sex scenes. And the sex scenes were hot. Yep. And it wasn't like there was like nothing sexual before that point. But yeah, it was, I was like, I would have enjoyed these more like spaced out a bit more.
Yeah. It's like when you say a word like over and over again and it loses meaning, you know, yeah. It's like, okay, they bang and you're like, yes. And then they keep banging and banging and banging. You're like, okay, I get
You're
it.
Like, I'd be sore it. At this Stop. Point. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Take a break. Humor.
I did find a lot of the dialogue, especially between each of the characters and their friend groups, to be really fun and humorous. Like I said, this is definitely a case of liking a lot of the side characters more than the main characters at times. I might give it a 4. I did find it funny. Like, there were moments that would have me, you know, giggling, but it was kind of like the, when she calls her orgasm my O, in that I felt like it got a little overdone after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, it's funny. I get it. Let's concentrate on you and Simon falling in love and make that happen. So yeah, I think I'd give it a 4 though.
I will say this book is trying very hard to be like a 6 on the humor scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just, right, like it does feel a bit like, all right, you're doing great. Like, just back up and we'll enjoy this even more.
Right.
What about angst?
I was going to say the only angsty person is Caroline, but I feel like there's definitely some angst going on in the friend group with, like, nobody's sharing their feelings. And Simon is definitely a little angsty when it comes to, like, I don't know if I want a real relationship. So maybe it's a little more angsty than I thought. I don't know. I always think of angst and I think of like emo kid on the corner. Like, that's like the first
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll say on the angst scale, maybe like a 3, 3.5.
It's so funny how every guest has a different concept of what these things mean and like their skills seem so different. But like, I think of angst as everything that happens, every scene is just like there's just this cloud of, I don't know how to describe it other than angst of just like, oh, everything feels so heavy. and right. But I do think that a lot of my guests think about it more just like emotional, like the character has emotional angst, you know, which is, I think that's fair.
Maybe I'm confusing it too with like my own personal frustration and angst I felt during sections of the book where I'd be like, what are you doing? Come on. But yeah. That's a whole different rating.
Yeah. What would you give it on a 1 to 5? 5 with the most frustrated you were with this book on the frustration scale.
I'm going to go with like a solid 3, like halfway there.
Yeah. There were definitely some parts where you're like, all right, guys, get your heads out of your asses and talk to each other. Make it work.
Yeah, seriously. That's communication, friends.
It's key. Let's pull into Trope Town. And you and I discussed this previously where I was like, all right, get your train noise ready. And you were like, what? There's train noises on this show?
Where are we going?
We're going to pull into the station of Neighbors, 2 Lovers. But first, Kelly, you said that you do have a train noise to share.
Oh, yeah. You ready for
I'm
this?
I'm so ready.
Choo-choo.
Oh, that! What a nice, gentle train.
That's it.
I like that. That's calming. That's soothing.
Yeah. My train would give a gentle choo-choo to be like, the train is here. You are welcome aboard. Yeah. And I feel like too many trains, it's like, get your ass on this train. We are leaving in 20 seconds, whether you're here or not.
I mean, so I guess this makes sense for Neighbors to Lovers, where you're home. Don't toot too loudly.
Come on in.
Don't disturb your neighbors.
Also a recurring theme.
Exactly. Right. So we decided on Neighbors to Lovers because obviously Simon and Caroline are neighbors and they become lovers. And what, Kelly, is your recommendation for a book with the Neighbors to Lovers trope?
I have a couple. And I actually, as we were discussing this book, I thought about the one that I'm going to recommend more because there actually is discussion in it about our main female character having trouble finding her orgasm in this book too. I didn't even think about that when I chose it, but it's called Cade and it's by Liliana Hart and it's part of her Mackenzie series. So it's kind of like a little spy thriller-y and Cade is like the next door neighbor that moves in and makes so much noise and is always waking up our like main female heroine. And then they like, you know, start hanging out and then, you know, sparks fly. And there's also like some mystery and intrigue. So if you're into like the spy thriller thing, I think you'll totally be into it.
So Amanda Deal in, was it episode 1 or 2?
Mm-hmm.
She gave her write this book and it was something about like a spy next door. The gender roles were reversed. The spy was the lady in her example. But is there at any point, does the spy guy, he's making a lot of noise because he was just shot?
You know what? There is a scene where he is shot and our main character, I'm totally forgetting her name right now, but our main female character, Bailey. She owns like a lingerie shop. And so he asks her to like stitch up his skin from the bullet wound.
Ooh, okay. I'll tell Amanda, this is not quite exactly her write this book, but I feel like it might get scratch a similar itch.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Yeah, it's honestly, and it's part of a whole series of like all these like super alpha spy guys. And you know, they're lucky ladies. If you're into that, go with that one.
Perfect. All right. And then you said you had a second one?
It's kind of a Neighbors to Romance in that it's Heat of the Night by L. Kennedy. And ironically enough, it's very also spy-ish. It's they're all the characters in this series. It's called the Out of Uniform series. They're all like Navy SEALs, which I find like super hot. So I'm into that. And in this one, it's where this girl has moved into this apartment and she's like basically renting it from a friend, similar to our setup in the book we talked about today. And her like hot Navy SEAL neighbor that she's never met used to have a like friends with benefits situation with the girl that she's renting from. So he comes into the apartment like while she's sleeping, assuming it's the girl he used to hook up with. And they start like fooling around in bed and she's like, oh my God, who are you? And he's like, I don't know who you are, but like, let's keep going. He ends up being her neighbor. And so like, they definitely hang out and she's like kind of annoyed by him, but then finally gives in to those urges and, you know, goes after him. And kind of like Wallbanger also, it's very much about her rediscovering her sexuality. Like she just got out of a bad relationship where her fiance dumped her for saying that she was too vanilla. Ooh. And so she basically creates this like sex list of like things she wants to do. And she decides that he's going to be the one that she does them with.
Ooh, a sex pact too.
Yeah, sex pact. So that's that.
That's one of those scenarios where I'm like, okay, all right. And then I'm like, ooh, but not in real life. Like, nothing about that is sexy in real life.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like why people get so much shit for like rape fantasies in that, you know, it's like a very common fantasy for women is a rape fantasy. But that's not people saying that they want to actually get raped. Like, that's not what that is at all.
Right. I know you said you were going to listen to the Time Served with Keeney Allen episode. So we definitely talk about that in that one. So you're in for a treat.
Good. All right. I'm excited.
Okay. So I had some recommendations for the Neighbors to Lovers trope from Twitter. So HEA Apologist recommended A Princess in Theory by Alyssa Cole. And she said it loosely fits this. And I'm sure there's a billion more I've read, and I love this trope. And Charlotte Romans Degar, Daguerre.
Ooh, good name.
Mm-hmm. Says, Alicia Rye's serving pleasure is neighbors with a taste for voyeurism to lovers. Ooh.
Ooh, I like it.
Like, is there, like, is somebody looking through a window? That sounds,
Fine by me. Mm-hmm. I'm into it.
And my recommendation was Broken Night by L.J. Shen. Have you read anything by L.J. Shen?
I don't think so. That name is not, like, ringing any bells, but tell me.
Okay, I really like her, and she is one of those authors that in certain pockets of Romancelandia, I think is, like, super, super popular, and then there's, like, other parts that just don't even know she exists. And it is my personal goal to bring her to greater awareness of the larger Romancelandia community, because I think she's a really amazing writer, and I've read most of her books. But this book, Broken Night, the characters in this universe are the children of the characters in sort of, like, a previous grouping of books. And
okay,
all of the parents are, like, friends, and they basically build their houses next to each other. And so all of their children are neighbors. Some of them are, like, related. They're, like, cousins, but not these two characters. Thank God. That'd be weird. So they grow up together, the two characters, and he's a little bit younger than her, and he's, I think, like, 2 years younger than her, and he's kind of her.
Ooh, I love a good younger man.
Yeah, and he's, like, always been into her and loved her, and for various reasons, she's held him off a little bit because he's a little bit younger, a little bit because I think she feels broken, and oh my God, this book had me in tears, but it's actually, the characters are, like, 18 and 19 in it, so they're very young, at least they seem very young to me. And have very adult emotions. Like, they don't act like 18 and 19 year olds at all, which is probably why I enjoyed it, because I actually have no desire to get into the head of a real 18 year old.
Right. That's important, because you're like, I don't want to think about you being 18.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what I want in my mind.
Right. Exactly. I think it's a really beautiful book. The heroine in it is mute and...
Oh, that's awesome.
It's kind of like a muteness based on a trauma, and she does, over the course of the novel, regain her ability to speak and communicate. But the hero learned sign language as a child. Like, all of the kids in the neighborhood learned sign language so they could communicate with her.
Stop it. Stop yes. it. I am downloading this immediately. What is it called again?
Broken Night, like K-N-I-G-H-T. By L.J. Shen. The previous, like, grouping of novels of the parents are also really beautiful. And I have to say, there is a very sad aspect of Broken Night that literally had me in tears. I was sitting at my dining room table, like, sobbing with tissues. Like, I was sloppy crying. But it's also, I don't want to spoil it, but what happens really subverts what we think about romance as a genre, where, oh God, I have to ruin it. I'm sorry, guys. I don't think it's a...
It's fine. Tell me, and if people don't want to hear, you can turn away, turn off the podcast, yes. Skip ahead 30 seconds. Go.
So this character's mother dies in the book, and the mother is the heroine of a previous book that L.J. Shen has written.
Mm.
And she has cystic fibrosis, which, you know... It's going to take you out at a certain point in your life. That's just kind of how it is now with the way medical technology is. And that's part of what kept the characters apart as long as they were apart in the previous novel with the mother and father, because the father knows that she's going to die young and it's very painful. But they end up getting together, and then we see her die in this book.
Yeah.
But it's really beautiful. I think it really does hammer home this message of, well, they had a really beautiful love story. And just because it didn't end with them both being, like, old and gray and seeing their grandchildren and great-grandchildren, like, it doesn't mean that that love story wasn't worth happening. And I think that's, like, a really beautiful...
Absolutely.
If you have something going on with your health that means you may not live as long as other people, that doesn't mean that you don't deserve to have love and like, live life to the fullest while you are alive.
Absolutely. Well, and those are the stories that I want to see. I want to see representation for characters with disabilities. I want to see representation for people with illnesses. Like, That's, I mean, that's beautiful. Like, I love that that's in there. I feel like it sounds weird to say it, but I feel like it makes it all worth it too, that you got to see their romance first. And then, you know, you see like what became of that romance. Oh, well, we had a child together and we were so happy together and everything. Like it, oh God, it's just, that's so beautiful. I love that. I'm for sure going to check out this series.
Okay, great. I think she's a really beautiful writer also.
I'm going to check it out. I'm going to spread the word.
Do it.
Thanks for listening to episode 10 of Shelf Love, a romance novel book club. Thank you to all of the contributors to this episode, including GayDreaming1 on Twitter for the Survivor reference in the intro. And huge thanks to my guest, Kelly. You can find Boobies and Newbies on Instagram and Twitter at Boobies Podcast, and you can listen to episodes on all major podcast apps. You can find me on social media at Shelf Love Podcast on Instagram and at Shelf Love Pod on Twitter. You can always reach me directly at Andrea@shelflovepodcast.com and head to shelflovepodcast.com to sign up for the email newsletter list to get exclusive bonus content. In my last episode, I asked listeners if they felt they had more or less time over the holidays to listen to podcasts, and comments along with an informal Instagram poll seemed to indicate that 3 out of 4 Romancelandia podcast listeners have more time. So, next week, many Americans will be celebrating Thanksgiving. While you travel, relax, and prepare for your own holiday festivities, you can listen to my conversation with author Kate Claiborne as we discuss A Midnight Feast, a space race era marriage and trouble romance by Emma Barry and Genevieve Turner. On the next episode after that, author Lucy Score and I delve into a discussion of true crime and survivors when we read Nora Roberts' The Obsession. If you love this podcast, please share with a friend or many friends on social media, or help spread the word to strangers by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Whenever I get a new review, I get so happy it's ridiculous, so please make my day. It really means a lot to me. Thanks for listening, and I hope your week is banging. Shelf Love is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more outstanding podcasts to subscribe to, including Boobies and Newbies, at frolic.media/podcasts.